This is the Top 25 Rundown, and here's your host, Alan West.
Good evening, and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown presented by the Sports Cast. Today's date is January 11, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe on our channels, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch.tv, and Apple Podcasts. If you are on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review. It'll help us out tremendously. You can listen to us on your smart speaker, play Sportscast. You can also visit us on the sportscast.net and also follow us on Twitter at the Sportscast1 and check out our app, the Sportscast, in the iOS App Store. Hello, my name is Alan West, and welcome to the Top 25 Rundown. Once again, I am thankful to have Christopher Caravello, writer for the West Coast College Football and co-host of the Southern Gentleman Sports Show on the Ticket 850 AM in Pensacola, Florida. How are we doing tonight, Chris?
Doing good. I'm sad that the college football season has officially come to a close, but hey, I'm glad to be here talking to you.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And yeah, I feel the same way. I mean, we're going to dive deeper into it in a few minutes. One thing I do want to bring up first is 9 days ago, DeMar Hamlin, how he collapsed on the football field on Monday Night Football. Would you believe that on Monday he flew back to Buffalo, and then we found out from news reports today he's been released from the hospital? How amazing is that?
Yeah, I mean, we still don't know a lot of the details, and you know, that's not important right now. Right now, it's important to focus on that this guy is alive, because
yes,
for a few days and in the aftermath after he collapsed, it was not really apparent, you know, whether he was going to survive this, which I couldn't even imagine what that was like being on the field or inside the stadium when it happened. So good to see that he is only 9 days later, he's going home.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw these are starting to trademark a few things for what happened, and as he should. It's more just, I guess the best way to put it, since I am a religious person, is, I would definitely say that God had something to do with his recovery and just making sure that he was okay. I mean, it was a scary sight watching that, and then just to know how much better he is, and then also, for Buffalo, how they did win the game, and like that 96-yard kickoff return for a touchdown to start the game, with how for his jersey number 3, and apparently been 3 years since they had a kickoff return for a touchdown. I mean, there were too many coincidences from that game for him, and I mean, I'm just thankful he's here, but I mean, just watching some of those coincidences too, I would say it was kind of an added bonus.
Yeah, and they'll head into the playoffs with him on their mind, and I'm sure that they'll continue this wave of positivity that they've had since knowing he was going to be okay and he was able to transfer hospitals and not be out of the hospital. So, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if he's able to, that he's somewhere in the stadium when they play their first playoff game, which is amazing. So, you know, hats off to the organization. And, you know, that's a snake bit franchise, losing on 4 straight Super Bowls. I remember it when I was a kid. I liked watching the Buffalo Bills, Jim Kelly, Bruce Smith, you know, Thurman Thomas. There was all kinds of awesome players on that squad. So it's good to see this franchise finally be where it is. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to be able to, you know, get him healthy and have, you know, a positive future, you know, the team and for him.
Absolutely. One player you didn't mention that I will mention is Andre Reed.
He actually
changed one of his jerseys, and he took off the 8 to make sure just as the 3 was shown, and made sure to have Hamlin's name on the back of the jersey when he took the picture. Which, yeah. I mean, for him, with how he did as a wide receiver there, and just some of the memories that he made, I mean, that's pretty big. At least in my point of view. So, But yeah, now Buffalo, they have been, like you said, a snake bit franchise, but him being alive is more important than that. And that's what we're thankful for. But before we get into Georgia and TCU, I want to hit real quick on North Dakota State and South Dakota State. Because I believe you and me both picked North Dakota State to win when we were talking about that in last week's episode. I think.
Yeah.
I know I picked them.
I definitely did. You know, I'd never be one to go against the Bison after what they've done the last like decade. You know, this is the first national championship game they've lost. But I think it's important to acknowledge that everything ends. You know, that no one's going to be perfect forever, no matter how on top of the world they seem to be. And South Dakota State, they'd already knocked them off once in Fargo. So it's not like this team, you know, they knew that they could do it. And they looked for – I only got to watch the first half because I was flying back home on Sunday. But it certainly looked like they were not intimidated in the least, being on the same field as the Bison. So, I mean, they seemed to run the ball at will. They got enough out of the quarterback. Hit on some big plays. It was kind of similar to the next game that we're going to talk about, where South Dakota State, it was like every play was in a first down, it seemed like. And that was just a recipe for disaster for North Dakota State.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at the information on here for the game, and I see that North Dakota State's quarterback, Cam Miller, he was 18 to 29 for 260 yards. He had two touchdowns, but he had two interceptions, and he did rush for 13 carries for 64 yards as well. But he got two of the touchdowns for passing, and Kobe Johnson, the running back, was the one who had the other touchdown. But Kobe Johnson also lost a fumble.
Whereas
for Gronowski, he was 14 to 21 for 223 yards and three touchdowns, and he also had a rushing touchdown, as did Davis and Johnson. So, I mean, when you score 24 points in the second quarter.
Yeah.
I mean, they put the game away then.
Every time North Dakota State seemed like they were going to get themselves back into the title game, South Dakota State answered with a touchdown. No field goals. They were going for six every drive.
I mean, it was... Because I admit I was I was watching the Commanders, or I was watching one of the other games that was on, but I was curious about this game, and honestly I thought the Bison were going to pull it out, but when I looked at the score and just reading this box score, yeah, it was not as close as one would have thought it was going to be. But as you said, nothing lasts forever, and North Dakota State, the thing that's been impressive for them is when you look at the national championships that they've won, it's not only been FCS national championships, they won Division II championships so they could move up.
Yeah. I mean, and they've knocked off several FBS schools. I was shocked when they lost to Arizona this year. As soon as I saw that game on the schedule, I was like, well, here it goes. You know, Arizona is by no means on level ground yet. They've been improving, but I thought for sure the Bison would win that game. But, you know, maybe that was a sign of things to come. And then they lost to South Dakota State as well in the regular season. So, like I said, you know, eventually you're going to be knocked off the top of the mountain. And this is the year where it finally happened, and I'm sure that they're going to regroup and have another, because it's not like they've won those 10 titles in a row. You know, they've had a few times where they lost in the playoffs, so they know what it's like to have those setbacks. I think they'll be fine. They'll probably reload, but it is cool that the other far north kind of random state that doesn't have a FBS school South Dakota State is the one that holds the trophy up this year.
Yeah, no, I mean, that was a thing that I thought was cool as well, just because you've heard more about the Bison, which, I mean, that's been some great, I don't want to say bulletin board material, but it's definitely been something that probably made South Dakota State say, okay, we're here too. Even though we haven't been talked about, we've been pretty good as well. And so, because when you looked at the teams that were in the playoff at the end, besides Incarnate Word, with Montana State, North Dakota State, and South Dakota State, being a college football fan, you wouldn't think that states with weather that cold would have done that. And so for them to all do that, that's huge. I mean, the only comparison we were talking about for a team for dominance, I would have to say it would be probably like Mount Union in Division III. They usually are playing for the title or in the game right before the title almost every year.
Yeah, so. And I mean, the Bison have done it with several different quarterbacks, mm-hmm. a couple different coaches, so it's very impressive, the longevity of their success.
We will definitely see how they go, but yeah, I definitely think that they're going to be reloaded and they'll be ready next year. So, I mean, it'll just mean that they get to start something new and make it even better for them.
Yep.
That being said, though, I can't put off talking about TCU and Georgia, because for me, last week, me and our other coworker, Byron, who was on with us, we both said TCU was going to score 40. Well, I turned out to be wrong by 33 points, and they only scored in the first quarter. After that, the game was over. I mean, you know, in a way, it kind of felt like the game was a little anticlimactic just because of how much of a brawl it was against Ohio State. And then for this game, it was just over in the first quarter. And then you just saw it instead of them. You would hope TCU was going to have a comeback, but every time they would try, Georgia would just come up with a big play or a defensive stop. And then you're just like, all right, that's going to happen. That. And then with Duggan throwing the two interceptions, that definitely didn't help. But I would definitely say that that was Stetson Bennett's swan song, with him being responsible for 6 touchdowns. I mean, he definitely deserved the offensive MVP.
Yeah, and it's crazy to say that he's probably the best. I mean, certainly the most decorated quarterback in that school's history. I mean, mm-hmm. I guess you could say their other superstars, Herschel Walker, rightfully so. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what Stetson was able to do is, I think my favorite part of the story for him is that he left. He left to go to a mm-hmm. junior college, Jones College, I think it was, and then came back and had to beat out a 5-star transfer in JT Daniels that probably thought he was coming in from SC and he'd be just handed the reins. And this kid just refused to go down, you know, always came back, and then he's thrived, you know, back-to-back championships, back-to-back MVPs. Can't say enough about what he did in a Georgia Bulldog uniform, and I'm not going to count him out as being able to make a roster in the NFL. You know, I'm not saying he's going to start, but some of the other, I mean, pardon me, but jokes that I've seen in the rosters this year playing backup in the NFL, you can't tell me that if you put the right coaching staff around him, he wouldn't be competent and could hold down a roster spot.
I'm not going to say that. And in fact, I'm going to solidify your stance, because think about it. Last year's Mr. Irrelevant, he's the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers going into the playoffs.
Brock Purdy.
Yeah, the one who the people thought wasn't going to be able to do anything. And he's going to be the player.
Yeah, but like, I think Brock Purdy accomplished enough at Iowa State. Yeah, he had done enough at Iowa State to where I don't think he should have been Mr. Irrelevant, but you know, the draft is fickle. Sometimes that's just how it shakes out, and he's definitely making the most of it. And there's no reason to think Stetson can't do the same, even if he's not drafted.
True. I mean, I can agree with that. I mean, what he's always saying for Purdy, sure, he did. He had a good career in Iowa State, but the thing was, just because of how the draft turned out, you didn't really expect that he was going to be in that opportunity, and then everything worked out how it did, and now he's getting to have a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, which is great. And I mean, Stetson, the thing that they also talked about as well, he was the offensive MVP in all four playoff games that he played, which is the first time that's ever happened. And the other thing that when I was doing a little, research for Stetson Bennett, Justin Fields had been at Georgia before he transferred to Ohio State. So if he hadn't transferred to Ohio State, then it would have been a little bit more difficult for Stetson. But that being said, he's fought for everything that he got, and for him to go out how he did, I mean, I give him all the props in the world, because he definitely did not back down, even when everyone else was like, he may not get to do it. He just said, okay, I'm still here. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's a little different than, you know, maybe what Kirby's learned under with Saban, and how Alabama used to have several game manager type of quarterbacks, Jacob Coker, AJ McCarron. I mean, whatever, back to back. I think he was the last one that won those two titles in a row. But, you know, you can't convince me that those were superstar recruits like Justin Fields was and some of the other playoff quarterbacks. You may have went into maybe last postseason thinking Stetson was in that mold of game manager, but I'm going to throw the flag on that. They won those games because of Stetson Bennett, how he played against Alabama last year, how he played against Ohio State this year. I mean, they certainly probably could have beaten TCU with someone else under center. They were just that much better, but Stetson Bennett played out of his mind in all four playoff games. And that's why I think you got to scrap that he's not a game manager. You know, he thrived in that offense under Todd Monken.
Well, not only that, think about during the year, because some of the games that, like, even Missouri, how that was the toughest game that they had besides Ohio State, at least in my opinion. So
that one in Kentucky, those were the ones where I was like, I'm starting to get a little concerned at halftime.
Yeah, but I mean, even still, he made enough plays to where they could win. And I mean, others would have been worried, but you could tell that just how Georgia, the offense was, they knew that at some point he was going to do enough to win. And I mean, in this game, when it came to some of the passes, the two players that I thought, I would say, made the biggest impact was McConkey and Bowers, just because McConkey in this game, it really didn't even seem like half the time he was being guarded. Because, I mean, you would see him open most of the time. And then for Bowers, that one third down play where they were just trying to get, I think it was 8 or 9 yards, and he got him like almost 40. I mean, he just was, because in the last game, we thought that he was going to show out against Ohio State some, where he had an okay game, but it wasn't a game like you were like, okay, this guy is going to do really well. But this game, he came to play, and he made sure that when TCU tried to tackle him, I think he broke like 7 tackles in that game. And that one, he almost scored the touchdown. I think Bowers, it took three of their players.
He is the best player in college football, and it's just a matter of showcasing him enough so the rest of, you know, the college football world admits it, you know, because I think that if you make him the focal point of the offense, I've not seen anybody stop him yet in his career. His 2 years at Georgia, he's just been unstoppable. He's a just gross mismatch for anyone that lines up and tries to cover him. And the way Georgia schemes him open, it just throws it even more, you know, out of sync for the defense trying to account for him. he was just a total mismatch. And I think that had Georgia forced the ball a little more to him against Ohio State, because I mean he still had a very important play in that game where he did the yoga move on fourth down to get it just across the marker. I mean, if he doesn't do that, maybe they don't even win that game. So
awesome.
He shines in whatever way Georgia needs him.
Basically, I could almost compare it to, remember how we were talking about Max Duggan having a play where he was going to show why he was a top quarterback? Unfortunately, in this game, when he tried to do that, he threw those two interceptions because he was trying to take over the game. But unfortunately, the defense was ready, and that was part of the reason why Javon Bullard got defensive MVP for them. And the other thing was that Quentin Johnson, their big play guy from last week, he only had one reception for 3 yards in the entire game.
Yeah, and I think on the flip side of what we just said about forcing the ball to Bowers, TCU should have forced the ball to Johnson, because it's not like this could have gotten any worse. And he did have the opportunity to try and hit him deep. He was wide open. He should have scored a touchdown on that play where the DB made the interception. But Duggan threw an awful pass. You know, he had been under duress. Georgia didn't even have to – it wasn't the first guy. It was like the second and third player that was getting to him, because the coverage was so sound. None of the first reads or even the second were open for him. So I think he was just gun shy at that point and had totally misfired. And that was it. You know, Johnston was a ghost in this game, and it's unfortunate because he's an awesome player, but I think the matchup, it was a better matchup to have Ringo against him than the prior week when Ringo was trying to cover Marvin Harrison Jr. It's just a different type of athlete, faster, you know, more technically sound route running. Johnson's just it's just kind of like DK Metcalf. You know, he's just an athletic freak. He's huge, but so is Ringo. And I think that actually played into his favor. I certainly didn't think it would end up in only one catch for 3 yards, but I mean, look at the scoreboard. Nobody got anything done. And, you know, even if they had been able to force some throws to Johnston and completed them, it wouldn't have made a damn of a difference.
No, it wouldn't have. And I mean, one thing I will bring up outside of this game, I did see the Cade Stovers coming back one more year. So I'm curious to see how he does for Ohio State with that, because I think he would have made a difference in the game as well, because when he had to leave going to the hospital because his back was hurting, that's how everyone knew that something was wrong, because he does not leave games. So yeah, that was tough. But I mean, in this game, do you remember how ESPN, when you would look at like college football, it would always say it was over when? How they would have that for college football games? For this one, basically, it would literally say it was over when the opening kickoff happened, because even though you saw that they scored a touchdown, when you look at Max Duggan's total rushing yards for the game, he ended up with negative 38, even though he did have that touchdown.
Yeah.
Because he kept getting sacked. Because watching Georgia, you were just seeing that it was, I think half the time they were only blitzing three people.
Yeah, they didn't have to blitz.
The three players. They didn't have to have the other players even come out. I mean, if they did, then you knew that, okay, they're probably going to punt after this, because Georgia had their way with them without even a question. You hoped they weren't going to, but when you were just watching the game, it's just like, okay. So they got the ball. They're trying to throw the – nope, this isn't going to work. They're trying to run it. Nope. I mean, you would see that Georgia had the bend but not break defense. But even when they had that, they were limiting the amount of first downs to where you just knew that unless a miracle happened, the game was over. I mean, it was brought back memories of the year before when they played Michigan and how that game was over in the first half. It reminded me of that.
Yeah, you know, in that game, they just kind of slowly squeezed the life out of Michigan. This game, it was just devastation, you know, from the very first play of the game. Everything seemed to go wrong for TCU. So I know this sounds cliche, and I hate it even having to admit it and acknowledge it, but it's just a different kind of athlete at Georgia versus what you see at TCU. The way they've recruited from high school, they don't have to rely on, you know, transfers. I don't even know if they took a transfer last year. It's just five stars matter, man. You know, the blue chip ratio, it is what it is. And when you have a roster that's constructed the way Georgia's is, there's very, very, very few teams in college football that can even be on the same field as them. One of them was last week in Ohio State. They were lucky to escape that game with a win. But, you know, as far as the other two teams that have made the playoffs this year, I just don't think these teams can compete with Georgia when you give them, you know, this much time to prepare, 14 games of tape for the coaches to study. And when they're dialed in, it's just going to be very hard for anyone that's not in that blue chip ratio of with their roster to be able to compete. And when we go to the 12 team playoff, I think this is just last week's game, Ohio State versus Georgia. That's just the end result. You know, these other teams that are going to be in the way in these first couple rounds, they're just going to get blown off the field, man.
I agree. I mean, that's why watching it, I really felt that this game was kind of anticlimactic, because when you were watching the other games, you could see, okay, there's still a chance. But just for my money, I would say that Ohio State and Georgia was the game of the playoff this year. That's just my personal opinion. But, I mean, it was just two giants going back and forth, to where even when we had our two main players go down, we still didn't give up. And we were still within a play of winning. So, I mean, it wasn't like we went in and we just said, okay, well, we're just going to let you win. Go ahead and do whatever you want. Whereas it felt like this game, once everything just started to fall apart, there was no coming back, at least in my point of view, because I hoped they would, because I was hoping that when I said they would score 40 points, it would happen. But when I was watching how the offense could barely get any first downs, and just how the defense was showing up on third down, just stopping them every time, it's just like, what are we here for? Because I wanted TCU to do better, because for Sonny Dykes, how he had led them there and how he had done really well this year. But the five stars do make a difference, and also just like Tyler had said, how the running back had gotten hurt the week before. I think that he would have definitely made a difference this week, but I don't think it would have been enough of a difference to win the game, unfortunately.
No, absolutely not. There's nothing TCU could have done. I would have liked to have seen them hit the desperation mode earlier in the game. They just seemed too set on their game plan. I don't know what it is they could have altered to make a difference or hit this Georgia team and score some more points. But, I mean, it was apparent early on that, you know, Duggan was going to have to make some quicker reads. They should have rolled him out of the pocket. You know, I don't know. But before they even hit that point of desperation, this game was already over. This is the worst beatdown in bowl game history. Think about that. The worst ever happened in a national championship game. Anticlimactic. This is, I don't even know how to put it into words, man. Because I've seen some blowout title games in person. I was in the Rose Bowl in 2001 when Miami slaughtered Nebraska, and that was pretty much the end of the Cornhuskers. This felt even like somehow worse than that. And you know, I was watching disinterested, you know, by the second half. It just nothing. If you would have told me that this is a title game, I would have never believed you. Couldn't believe it was just that lopsided. But maybe I should have, you know. Maybe you should have looked at the rosters and said, this is going to get ugly, and it's going to get ugly very, very quickly.
I mean, the only comparison for kind of like a beatdown, if you were going to say that, I would say it was Ohio State and Florida when Troy Smith was the quarterback. Because remember when Ted Ginn, when he took the opening kickoff for a touchdown, where he hurdled the Florida player, and he broke his foot on that play, so he couldn't play the rest of the game. But without him, Troy Smith struggled and only got one touchdown. And that was, I believe that was with Tebow and League as the quarterbacks. They were going back and forth. Where Tebow was the short yardage quarterback and League was the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, when Ginn got hurt, they just couldn't do anything. They tried, and it was an epic fail. I mean, it reminded me of this game, except they scored two touchdowns. I mean, it was frustrating because you thought that how after the year had been, how TCU had fought through all the other games they played. I mean, they had some good games against Texas, against Kansas State, against Kansas. Even again, like their blowout against Oklahoma State, I couldn't believe when they did that. So, I mean, just watching it's like, wow.
The flip side of that is TCU won a lot of one-score games, and that takes luck sometimes. That is very, very hard to sustain. You kind of fall in love with the danger zone, and eventually you're going to get into a game where you run out of time and you can't come back. That's what's so crazy about this run by the Horned Frogs is that, you know, they didn't, you know, yeah, they had the last slip up against K-State, but, you know, you saw what K-State ran into in Alabama. It was a buzzsaw beatdown. Yeah. So I really think this comes down to the roster itself and that this was never going to be possible. Mm-hmm. And that's worrisome to a point because I think you just eliminated 90% of the field in college football because very few programs can accumulate this much talent at once and keep the core together and the coaching staff, you know, that can, you know, motivate and have these things firing on all cylinders, especially in the postseason. And if you're a fan or a player or a coach at any of these other schools, how do you not watch this title game and feel like you're one of the have-nots? Like, what is it going to matter? I mean, you really thought that 12-team playoff was going to be parity? I don't think so at all. I think it just gives more leeway to the four or five schools that have the roster to play for the title every year.
I agree, although I think at times it's going to show not only which four teams are going to be there, but it could show that, say, an upset could happen. You'd be able to see that. It would give a team that maybe wouldn't always get the recognition, it's going to give them a chance to at least show, hey, this is what we can do. Even if we don't win, per se, if we're able to show a strong showing, it means that depending on what happens with the transfer portal or with recruiting for the next year, they could have a different outlook on how things are going to be.
I don't agree, man. I think we're starting to see a sample size of look at the teams that have been that fourth seed that have made the playoff. Very few parlayed that into sustained success. And as far as the smaller schools, which, you know, TCU's in the Big 12 now, but I think up until recently, you still would kind of think of them as, hey, that was a really good Mountain West team that happened to get into a Power Five conference. Cincinnati, they made the playoff last year. Look what happened this year. Coach is gone, and you lost in some, I don't even know what bowl game that was. It wasn't to a very good team. You know, and who knows what's going to happen with TCU next year, because this was a team that missed a bowl game like two of the last 3 years. So I would really pump the brakes. I think that's really wishful thinking. And, you know, that was this cute banter for people on Twitter saying, I'm sick of seeing the same four teams. Let's have some ways for other schools to make this playoff. But I'm telling you, when it shakes out at the end of the playoff, it's going to be the same frickin' four teams.
True. I'm only saying that there could be more parity only with the 12 teams, just because they'll have more chances for some of the other teams to make it. But I still think that you're right, that the main four teams are going to be the ones that are there. I'm just curious to see which other teams get there, just because depending on the recruiting for some of them, you could see something. Like, I'll give you two examples off the top of my head right now, okay? I'm thinking Florida State and LSU. Just because you're seeing both of them, how they've been rebuilding some. I'm saying within a few years, maybe they can get back up to where to doing well. Because Florida State, they haven't really done anything since Jameis was the quarterback there. But for LSU, for Brian Kelly, how he's there, I really think that they're going to be going on the upside.
Yeah, but I would consider Florida State and LSU to be on par historically with the teams that we just talked about. I think that they are capable of loading up a roster to challenge the status quo. And I think the status quo should include those two teams. Florida State has won a title. They were the last BCS champion. LSU, not too far off from what many said was the greatest team ever. You know, I think that's recency bias, but 2019 was a pretty special team. So I think those teams, it's merely a way for the new coaching staffs to figure it out and recruit at the level that should be going to Baton Rouge and Tallahassee. I'm talking more about teams that haven't won a title in the modern era that are trying to break in and establish themselves. I don't think you're going to see it anymore. And I really don't think you're going to see a Cinderella. And that's what this TCU team was. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to happen again. It's set up now to be damn near impossible.
Okay. I mean, I can respect that. And while I could hope otherwise, just with how we've been looking at everything, it's going to be really hard to disprove that. But I can still hope that at some point it is disproven. I don't think it will be, but I can still hope that maybe somehow something like that could happen. I mean, that's part of the fun that we have, though, every year, getting to see which teams are going to win, make our picks for who's going to win which league, and then make our playoff picks, because we see, okay, these are the blue chip teams that we expect to win, and either they will win or they won't. And also just seeing, I mean, the Big Ten, how we have, like you said, Fickle at Wisconsin, Rule at Nebraska. I mean, that's two coaches already trying to take over two schools that, well, Wisconsin was okay, but Nebraska, just how they've been under Frost, how they would get all the close games and they'd lose them. I want to see how that happens, because right now for the Big Ten, there hasn't been a whole lot of parity. There's been Ohio State, there's been Michigan, there's been Penn State usually, and then it's been everyone else just trying to be there and at least win a few games. That's why you could even say for the ACC how it's been Clemson. Occasionally it's been either Florida State or Miami, or 2 years ago it was Pitt, I'm sorry. or even for the Pac-12 for you, how it's been Oregon. Now it's going to hopefully be Washington in there in the mix now, and then how Oregon State did pretty good this year and USC. I mean, the parity, sure, they are going to be the top, but it's just seeing how the recruiting is going to either make or break some teams. That's what I'm curious to see. That and for the transfer portal and just for the NIL.
Yeah, the transfer portal and NIL changes things a bit, but yeah, the West Coast schools got to keep West Coast talent home. There's been way too many quarterbacks and skilled position players leaving to go play in the SEC. That can't happen. There's too many California quarterbacks on these good teams' rosters. Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, sure, you know, the list goes on. And it's not stopping from what I've seen over the last recruiting cycle. So those teams out west are going to have to get creative on how they attract talent and keep talent home. Luckily, the transfer portal does offer some of those veteran options. And now that you can pay them legally, that helps as well, too. But yeah, it is. It's a tough road to try and break the vice grip that Ohio State and Michigan have on their conference. I'm not going to put Penn State on anywhere near that level of those two teams. And then everyone behind them is just, it's just a revolving door. So hopefully the new hires at Wisconsin and Nebraska do help those programs. I think Illinois is really trending in the right direction, but man, it's probably pretty far off until they can start challenging the Buckeyes and the Wolverines. But we'll have to see how Ryan Day reloads at quarterback. He just lost. There's something different about Stroud. You know, I think they've had several high draft picks at quarterback that haven't shaken out in the NFL. Ohio State, surprisingly enough, historically has not put any good quarterbacks in the NFL. The verdict is still out on Justin Fields. But Stroud seems like a generational talent, and that's going to be tough to replace.
Yeah, I mean, the quarterback that was besides him that was in the recent past was the late Dwayne Haskins. And the thing for Dwayne Haskins that a lot of people don't even realize, Dwayne Haskins only was a quarterback there for 1 year. And I mean, whereas other people were quarterbacks for 2 or 3 years, he was a record-setting quarterback for 1 year. And, I mean, he parlayed into an okay career for what he had, but I would have liked to see what he did at Pittsburgh. Although, when I was looking at early Heisman predictions, if Kyle McCall is a quarterback at Ohio State, he's already 16-1 to win the Heisman, which I found that was kind of comical.
Yeah, you know, it's very odd when you look at the last 20 years of Ohio State football. The two quarterbacks that won titles were Craig Krenzel and Cardale Jones. None of these other superstars. So, and that's what's weird and fun about college football. But I worry about the long-term health of the sport overall across the whole country, because you cannot have this consolidation of power, because it kills interest in a lot of the other parts of the nation when it's like, what's the point? My school has no shot. Yeah, you'll still show up on Saturdays and root like hell, but in the grand scheme of things, what are you going to do come bowl season? You know, probably just going to tune it off, you know, tune it out if your school's not part of the fun, you know? I guess the TV execs are hoping that the 12 team thing generates a little buzz, but like I said, you're just fooling yourself if you think it's going to go towards your school being standing there at the end. I really think this is a filter to weed out those smaller schools and give more chances to the traditional blue bloods that we've seen dominate the sport over the last 20 years.
I definitely can see that. And yeah, no, I do remember Krenzel and Cardale very well. I mean, Cardale, he stepped in after Baxter Miller got hurt against Clemson the year before. And then JT Barrett, when he broke his ankle against Michigan, and just watching how that was, I'll never forget it. but it's as much as we've wanted to be known for quarterbacks, it just has never really materialized at Ohio State. I mean, the last quarterback that I can really think of that two quarterbacks that actually did a little something in the NFL were Bobby Hoying and also Joe Germain. Bobby Hoying had been with the Eagles and Joe Germain was with the Rams for a little bit. And I mean, Tom Tupa, he was a quarterback at Ohio State, but he was more, he was also punter. The punter. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Does not count. That's the quarterback.
Exactly. Exactly. That's why I knew you knew that. But I mean, hey, he was a quarterback at Ohio State, even though you didn't really see much happen. And it just, I'd love to see a quarterback from Ohio State actually be able to have a good career in the NFL. I mean, hypothetically, we could partially take Joe Burrow a little bit since he was at Ohio State before he went to LSU, but I mean, he was successful at LSU, and I appreciated how he made sure to mention Ohio State when he won his Heisman. I was like, look, I did get everything from there, but I was able to translate it over at LSU.
Yeah.
I mean, just seeing different players, how they're willing to do that, and they make the sacrifice, even though they are not sure if it's going to work out. And for some, it works out great. For others, not as much. That's why I'm kind of curious to see how the NFL draft and the transfer portal goes, just because you see how different players have had great careers at one school, and then they're like, oh, you know what? Let me try for a career at this other school for 1 year and see what happens. I mean, Tyler, if he was here today, he would be like, well, how about Bo Nix coming back for another year at Oregon? And, I mean, even for you, for Michael Penix coming back for another year at Washington.
Yeah, absolutely. Those were huge big news out west when those two guys decided to come back. You know, another transfer guy at my other school, Jordan Travis, he started his career at Louisville seemingly a million years ago, and look what he's been able to do. So NIL changes things, and it always helps when you have a lot of success at your new school and you want to keep that train rolling. I'm glad neither of them were just one and dones, you know, at their new schools. So it's going to be interesting next year to see who has the leg up in the Heisman race, and which teams also are able to use that one last year of eligibility for those guys and go far with it.
Indeed. Before I go look at the rankings real quick, like we just talked about for your school, UW, how they just got Penix back. And I mean, they finished the year, I think, their highest ranking almost ever.
Since 2016, when they made the playoff. That's the last time they finished in the top 10. And it's been since, I think, 2000 that they're the highest ranked Pac-12 team, Pac-10 team at the end of the season. So this was obviously a fantastic year for them. And, you know, everybody came back as soon as Penix announced, which I think he announced early so he could let everybody else on the roster know, hey, next year, let's try and go get even more and improve on this. Go get ourselves a Pac-12 title. Try to make the playoff one last time when it's still four teams. Those are big goals, and everything is in front of them. They're riding so much momentum. And you think about where they were a year ago, just an absolute disaster, with a still very talented to come into that situation and keep the team together, the good players that they had, and turn it around so quickly. 4-8 to 11-2.
And now, and I'm definitely waiting to see if maybe Boer, if he is able to have another positive season, I would say that he should be in line possibly for Coach of the Year, which I'd be curious to see, even if it's not just Pac-10 or Pac-12 Coach of the Year. I think he may have a chance for the Home Depot Coach of the Year just with the solid foundation he had.
Yeah.
I think it's going to go up.
you know, if it wouldn't it wasn't a year in which, you know, TCU was the Cinderella story, and then, dude, UConn and Kansas made bowl games. So obviously those two coaches there, Leopold and Jim Mora Jr., former Husky, by the way, what they were able to do is just as phenomenal. So, you know, hopefully next year DeBoer is able to really put his stamp on this program and this conference and go even further. You know, I think going into the playoff in your second year, what Sonny Dykes did this year was nothing short of amazing. But yeah, that'd be pretty worthy of that recognition if he's able to do it.
I'll keep my fingers crossed about that. And besides, that's probably something we'll talk about on the previous show for next year. So, I mean, we've got about, 7 months before that, 8 months before that?
7 long months.
Yeah, but that just means that we'll get to check on that. And also, I see that they're going to try to do the USFL and the XFL. So, I mean, hey, even though it's not the football we want technically, it's the football we can at least watch occasionally to try to get ourselves prepared so that way we could see what's coming up. But real quick, I want to do just go through the final poll for the AP Top 25. So I see that we got Georgia number one, obviously. TCU ended as number two. Michigan ended as number three. Ohio State was number four. Alabama was number five. Tennessee was number six. Penn State was number seven. Your Washington Huskies were number eight. Tulane was number nine after their win over USC. Utah was number 10. Florida State was number 11. USC was number 12. Clemson was number 13. Kansas State was number 14. Oregon was number 15. LSU was number 16. Oregon State was number 17. Notre Dame was number 18. Purdue was number 19. Mississippi State was number 20. UCLA was number 21. Pittsburgh was number 22. South Carolina was number 23. Fresno State was number 24. Texas was number 25. So the question I have for you, sir, is of any of the teams that were ranked there, do you feel that certain teams should have been higher?
I think that Penn State was ranked too high. I think they only had one good win the entire year, and that was the Rose Bowl, in which Cam Rising died again. And you know, the last game of the season. So that one's kind of questionable to me. It seems that the two teams that get a lot of love from these rankings are Penn State and Texas. Texas, why are they still ranked in the top 25? Other than that, I don't really have very much to argue with. I mean, past the Final Four, it is what it is. It looks like it just kind of stayed around what it was after the regular season ended. Oregon State, I would have flip-flopped them. I mean, we do have head-to-head. Other than that, you know, I not too much to argue with.
Yeah, I mean, you got to respect how Tulane, Roy, and Fresno State were all able to make it in the top 25 because we were talking about for a playoff, odds are they wouldn't make the playoff, but still, they were able to have successful enough seasons where they did. They at least made it into the top 25, which, I mean, that Tulane game when they beat USC, I was surprised about that because I figured that Caleb Williams is going to be able to pull that win out. And then I had the alerts coming up on my work computer and I saw that they lost. I was like, what?
Yeah, I mean, that defense for USC is just historically bad. I couldn't believe they decided to bring Alex Grinch back. I got questions, and I'm not too worried Yeah, they have an absurd amount of talent. They have the Heisman Trophy winner, but if I'm Washington and Oregon next year, I'm saying bring it the hell on if you're going to field that defense.
I mean, that's their deal. Like you said, their defense at times, I just was watching. I'm just like, are you kidding me right now? And I mean, the other thing I think, just for me, I think that Alabama should have been below Tennessee just because for the head-to-head they did lose.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure they blew out Kansas State, but, I mean, Tennessee, the way that they fought all year, and even when Hooker went down, I mean, they fought in their bowl game, and it just, I felt, this is my personal opinion, I felt like they deserved to be the higher ranked. I mean, Alabama's Alabama, but still.
You can state that, like you said, head to head's got to matter, right? And there's too many times we're in these rankings, it seems like it doesn't matter. And I'll always go with the results on the field, speaking for themselves. You know, I will say this: it's apparent now that if you make the national championship game, they're the final two teams standing, you will not fall out of the top two. Because if TCU can lose like they did and not fall below two, no one will ever.
That is true. I mean, while it's sad that it ended the way that it did, it's still like the ESPN promotions for the commercials. It definitely was the greatest story ever told for this year. And I mean, that's why it's great to see how it goes. Just with the, I believe they even got Nolan Richardson, who was the one who was doing reading the story to his grandson, in there, which that was definitely something pretty good, just because of how he was when he was a coach at Arkansas. But I know, I'm sorry, that was Sylvester. I apologize. That was Sylvester Croom who was reading the story, the former coach of Mississippi State.
Nolan Richardson was what was it, 60 Minutes of Hell? Whatever, yep, he, yep, called that offense they ran.
He was a basketball coach. So yeah, no, that's, yep, why I had to think about it. So I was like, wait a second, no, it's the wrong coach. I had to make sure I got the right coach.
They like, man, I got to go back and watch that commercial if he was really in it.
Yeah, no, that's why when I realized, I was like, wait a second, I do know the difference, luckily, because it just, how they always made sure to, they tried to have the most important things when they were doing every one of those commercials. So I respected that, but I'm just wondering how they're going to build off it. I know that they talked with Hans Zimmer about doing a new college football theme. I'm wanting to see how that goes, but I mean, I think ESPN's college football theme as it is right now, it's pretty good. I mean, it's been one that's, you always already know what's going to happen every time when it comes on.
Yeah.
That being said, though, we've survived another college football season. It feels like it ended a little bit early, but to some, it ended too late, and to others, it did end on time. The main thing was, no matter what, we got to watch some great games, some good games, some bad games, some horribly bad games, but it makes us just look forward to next year and seeing who's going to show up, who's going to rise to the occasion, and who's going to win the awards and who's going to win the title next year.
Yep.
So with that being said, sir, I do thank you for your time for coming on, because I appreciate you, your input, and just how we were able to look at how different things were and how we both wanted a better game. But either way, we did get to see Georgia go back-to-back, which, like a lot of my friends say, go Dogs, and I say that with respect, although I still say go Bucks every day besides that. So just like, I know you will, I would leave you to go Huskies, correct?
We're go Dogs as well, so it's just a different logo.
That's true, and I am waiting to see about that. But if we were going to try and get a hold of you outside of here, what's the best way on social media?
At Nolcore, Nolecore. Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, type that in and you'll find me. Or SouthernGentlemanSports.com.
Nice. And for me, you'll either see me on Allen F. West on Twitter. I am going to post at some point. It's getting closer. And on Instagram at Allen.West.46. But keep track of all the different shows we have on the sportscast. And just thank you again, sir. This is Allen West. It's been the Top 25 Rundown. Have a good night.